Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives.
Anne Reichart, who is the author of The Dance Card, Looking for Love After Divorce. How many people, after a relationship ends, just feel like their world is ending and just kind of seem to fall apart and stay in that feeling of falling apart? Today's guest did something a bit different from that. Anne Reichart, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much for having me, Pamela.
And let's sort of dive right in. You were, in your view, happily married for many years, and then suddenly things were different.
Yes, I really was. I thought that I was happily married, and I had been married for 30 years.
Wow.
One day, my former husband now came to me and just outright said he no longer loved me and wanted to move on.
Just like that.
Just like that. It was quite a rude awakening, and I was blown away and actually was in denial for quite some time. And certainly when you have a loss of any kind of relationship, I don't care what it is, I started going through this grieving process after I accepted the fact that this was really happening to me.
Well, just the idea, and we've all certainly heard of similar scenarios where one person thinks it's just fine, and the other person, says, no, it's not been fine, it hasn't been fine for a long time, and now I'm done. I mean, I just can't imagine in that moment, as you were standing or sitting there, listening to your husband say these words to you that you never expected to hear, what that was like for you.
It was devastating because I wasn't believing him at that moment. I thought, well, this was a joke, because there were no red flags in my mind throughout the years that would have initiated such a behavior from this gentleman. He had just recently retired, and I look back now and I think, well, was he going through a midlife crisis? That midlife crisis that we talk about all the time, and all of a sudden he's seeing our children are growing and he wants to move on to something a little more stimulating and exciting. Now, I could rationalize and say, well, there was something that we both did wrong that wasn't, in line with making a successful relationship. But, frankly, I wasn't a drinker. I didn't smoke. I didn't do drugs. I wasn't unfaithful. There was really nothing there that I could think of that, would give him reason to do this.
And so when he came to you and said that he wanted to end the relationship, this wasn't a, I think I'm unhappy, let's try counseling. This was, that's it, I'm done, I'm gone.
Absolutely. That's the sad thing about it was he didn't give me an opportunity or the two of us an opportunity to seek some sort of a marriage counseling. He had already made up in his mind that he was out the door. And he had been thinking about this for some time, and I'm finding out now that he was thinking about this for many years.
Many years. Just that realization, I mean, how does that realization, how do you wrap your brain around that?
Very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it. I'm not sure if it's some dysfunction within him or his inability to really want to have a long-term relationship with me. I mean, maybe it was me. And I think that in a few conversations that I was able to have with him, and there was very little closure because we had no therapy, and neither did my children or the family. So we're still kind of struggling with this even 8 years later. But I think that he felt that our styles were different. That's what he came up with. Our personality styles were different. The way I approached life was different. He was very energetic, high energy, and type A personality. I was more low-key and introspective, and things didn't rattle me as much, and I think he really didn't like that about me.
So what it sounds like is that he was someone who had a hard time with his own intimacy skills, and rather than trying to approach them and give the two of you an opportunity to work it out or not, but the two of you together, he just made a decision and then he was gone. How did your children respond to this?
Oh, they didn't have any opportunity. He just left. He left. He didn't take any of his clothing.
Oh, my.
And that's why I kept thinking, well, maybe he's, you know, having some sort of mental breakdown of some sort. And, you know, he had gone to therapy, I found out, on his own without me. And I did suggest, well, do you suppose maybe we should go as a family? But no, he'd already in his mind made the decision that he was gone. He no longer had romantic feelings for me. And that was the basis for his leaving. He didn't have romantic feelings for me. And it centers around, I'm sorry, I have to be frank about this, but, you know, the sexual needs or ego gratification of him in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But in answer to your question, my daughters are now 26 and 24, and they were in high school. My oldest was just graduating from high school at the time,
mm-hmm.
and they never really had an opportunity to even address what was happening. So I, as a mother, felt like this is my goal at this point in time. I needed to help them get through this and try to understand without making it difficult for them in the sense of, you know, bashing their father and making him look like he's this evil doer, because he is their father and I wanted everything to be okay.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's so hard, particularly when there's just, you know, it seems to come out of nowhere. And if he left even his clothes, I can't imagine what it was like for your daughters to come home or come into the room and all of a sudden you're the one in the position of telling them that he left. Or did he talk to your girls, or how did that happen?
Well, he had already made the decision, and I said, well, do you suppose maybe we should sit down with the girls to, let them know? Well, and we did.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't have a choice. I had no choice in this matter because, like I said, he'd already made up his mind. And when he did come back to, you know, after settling down a bit, we told the girls together, but he controlled and dictated the whole conversation by claiming that we were both in agreement with this and this was a mutual decision.
And that was not true at all.
No, not at all. So, you know, over time, you have to kind of weigh the priorities of whether, do I tell them that this really wasn't my decision? Well, I felt I had to. I mean, this wasn't mine, but so how do you deal with that? I think my main goal was just to make them healthy throughout the process, and, you know, I would talk to them about it. And like I said, my older daughter was going off to college, so she just took off and left and never really has been back since.
Really? Oh, my. Another loss.
Another loss. Totally.
Oh, my. And your other daughter, how old is she? How old was she at the time?
She was a sophomore in high school. So she was with me throughout the transitioning period or the grieving period, and that was difficult in itself because you don't want to show your, you know, you don't want to show your grief to your children because it just makes them sad. You know, ultimately your children want both parents to be happy.
Right.
And I could see it in her face daily. Oh, how is mother going to be today, or what can I do to help? And, you know, she had her own life to worry about.
Of course.
That was the last thing that I wanted to do. And so I tried to hold in the grief that I had, but, you know, it's obviously, it doesn't work all the time. So I really feel bad for her because we have a terrific bond because of that.
Okay.
She was there throughout all the difficult times, and she continues to be there throughout all of, you know, the issues that I'm dealing with today, which are, you know, not so bad anymore, but...
Did your ex-husband try to maintain a relationship with your daughters?
He has now, definitely.
Mm-hmm. He has now.
Yes, and it's fine. And I am the one responsible for making that happen.
Hmm. So initially it sounds like he did not stay in contact with them. He was gone. He was just gone.
He was just gone because, I think he was dealing with some kind of a crisis in his, you know, in his own mind, so he had to resolve whatever that was, the guilt of leaving possibly the family, and he told me, I'm not leaving my girls, I'm leaving you, you know, as if I had done something just terrible. And I tried to explain to him, which really didn't get through to him at that point in time, that, you know, you're leaving the family. You're leaving, there's so much collateral damage that goes along with any kind of a relationship loss.
Right.
And the girls are going to be affected whether you admit it or not.
The rest of the family and friends, you know, people respond in sometimes unusual ways when there's a breakup, particularly after a 30-year marriage. So, I mean, I would think that others had their own bout with disbelief. But how were you treated and how were your girls treated after your ex-husband left?
That is a fabulous question, and I'll tell you why. In my case, my ex-husband was really quite a pillar in the community and very well known and terribly connected, whereas I was just, you know, the wife at home. Even though I worked, I still wasn't recognized as anyone but the mother of the, you know, his children.
Okay.
And when this happened, there was so much shock within the community. They were in disbelief because we were an ideal family.
Yeah.
At least I thought we were, and, you know, the community thought so too. Well, when this happens, alliances kind of change quite a bit. So the couple society and the couple situation became very disjointed. I was the one that was pretty much left out because he knew all of these people and they wanted to maintain a relationship with him. So I felt like, you know, and I put it in my book like this, I did feel like I was a leper of my old life. I really was. I was alone. There were a few friends that really stuck by my side, and thankfully for that, they are still very good friends of mine. And my family, I'm from a very large family. My mother is still alive, and she was absolutely the best support system I could ever have.
Wonderful.
So it was really wonderful. And I have four brothers and four sisters, so they were all special.
You know, the idea that once there is a split like this, then not only is it your spouse that's gone, it's your sense of yourself, it's your connection to yourself, particularly after 30 years, because now that one of those hats that you wore was wife, that's now gone, ripped away suddenly. Children are now having all kinds of stuff to deal with, family having all kinds of stuff to deal with, the loss of friends.
Everything and the above. Absolutely. It changes one's life 200%. I mean, mine was flipped upside down to the point where, and I can see where some men and women that go through this want to leave the community that they, you know, have called home for so many years.
Sure.
Because you want to start fresh somewhere else where people don't know you. I did feel that way, and I kind of feel that way even today, and it's been 8 years. And saying that, I've made the decision to kind of move away from where I live right now and start fresh. I probably should have done that a few years earlier, but, you know, I had to wait for my daughters to finish college and, you know, kind of get myself settled and kind of decide where I want to go. But yeah, it does change one's whole lifestyle and perspective, and people look at you differently as well.
And many times people look at you as though you're the one who did some egregious, horrifying thing to force the other person to leave. Did you get that kind of stuff?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Well, that's just human nature. People don't want to think that the person that they're siding with, so to speak, the bad guy. And certainly, you know, each party is trying to defend themselves. I would try to defend myself because I really hadn't done anything. I mean, obviously, he just left. And so how do you explain yourself for that? And then later on, I would hear from people within the community, well, this is why he left you, because you did this, and generally there are very insignificant things. I mean, like, I complained about the way he might have lost his teeth. I mean, silly, silly stuff like that. It may sound silly to you, but at the time, those were the realities that I was dealing with. So people have to, they have to decide for themselves, and it really isn't that important what other people think. You know in your heart what really transpired and what happened, and that's basically the most important thing. But you do, as for myself, I was concerned about, you know, my kids and how people would respond to them. So that was my first and the most important aspect in terms of making everything okay.
Yeah. Anne Reichardt is the author of The Dance Card, Looking for Love After Divorce. We're taking a break and we'll be right back. And we are back. This is Pamela Brewer continuing the conversation with Anne Reichardt, author of The Dance Card, Looking for Love After Divorce. And so many times the partner who leaves finds a way to blame the person who's being left for all the ills in the marriage. And ultimately the person who's left often begins to question and blame and shame themselves. Did any of that happen for you?
You know, I have to say just a little bit.
Okay.
Because I knew that there was really nothing that I had done, I wasn't about to blame myself for this. Obviously, you know, had we been able to have some counseling and talk through maybe specific issues, I might have discovered that, hey, well, this is what he felt that I did, or I could have corrected a few things, but I wasn't given that opportunity. So, you know, that was the hardest part for me. Why did this all occur? And, you know, that's pretty much how I dealt with that. So, I do think that in time, and it's been 8 years, he has finally admitted to me that, you know, it wasn't really me. It was just him and his dissatisfaction with being married in general. And the fact that he was no longer working, he lost his sense of who he was, and he felt like, you know, here I was, the CEO at home. I took care of everything that was in charge of the household.
Okay.
And now he no longer had a position in the community.
I see.
So here he'd have to come back home, and I was the CEO, and he had no place there at all in the sense of, you know, taking charge. So I think that might have been part of the issue.
Well, and again, I mean, I know I said this earlier, but what I hear is a distinct absence of intimacy skills for him. I mean, he sort of quietly, secretly engaged in therapy without your awareness. And, you know, often when one member of a couple goes to therapy and the other person isn't even aware, there's almost already an agenda. And you know, absent it being an abusive relationship, typically, you know, the one who's going to therapy secretly, they're looking for a way to leave. They've already made the decision and already not involved their partner. So his ability to really have an intimate dialogue with you about what was really going on with him emotionally, socially, I mean, retirement is a big thing. It sounds like that was the thing that tipped the balance, if you will, was his difficulty with intimacy, and then everything seemed to flow from that. But I will never know, as I don't know your husband. Talk about what this last 8 years has been like for you.
The last 8 years have been very interesting. I, as you know, in my book, The Dance Card, I chronicle the past 8 years in my journey in online dating. And I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would ever write a book, number one. I was a registered nurse for so many years and, and an educator. And I really had no intention of doing any kind of dating. That was the last thing that was on my radar. However, when I was going through this grieving process, I was just newly separated, and I was, you know, my self-esteem obviously was terribly low. And my niece, who I've cared for since she was very young because my sister passed away, was with me, and she encouraged me to do an online dating site. And I knew nothing about it, and at that time there were just a few sites to choose from. But I thought, okay, well, as a distraction, let's just check it out. So we did. And, you know, she helped me get through all this technological stuff on the internet and how to proceed with, you know, maybe looking for a potential partner online.
Which is a whole new thing for you.
Unbelievable.
it's a whole new world. May I ask how old you were when you began the online dating scenario?
Yes, I was 56 years old.
Okay, 56, and you are really a babe in the woods when it comes to this online dating business.
Oh, absolutely. But what I discovered, Pamela, is that as soon as you log on to this site and put up a profile, which I will explain to you in a minute, you are kind of there for the picking. And it's all of a sudden the individuals just pop up on your site, and the numbers, the sheer numbers of 50-some-year-old men and women on this site were astronomical.
Astronomical.
That blew me away, because I thought, well, here I was all by myself going through this horrible situation. There's no one that could understand what I was going through, when in fact there's 50 million single people out there doing the online dating thing.
Wow. Well, that certainly puts it in a different context, doesn't it?
It does.
Tell me about this profile. What is that, and what did you do with that?
Well, when you sign up for a particular site, you write a little synopsis about yourself, and it can be two or three paragraphs, and a profile is pretty much a sales pitch. And you pour your heart and soul out onto this virtual page, honestly, to try to sell yourself to the person that, you know, the people that are out there. And if they're interested, they may look at your profile, and usually you put a little picture up there of yourself. And if they like you, they can respond back with a wink, or they will text you or email you via the safe site. So you can begin a conversation that way. And if you feel like this is an individual that you might have some kind of a connection with, even though you really haven't talked on the phone yet, you carry on a conversation via email. And if it goes in the right direction, then you choose whether or not you want to exchange phone numbers. And you can talk to each other off-site.
All right. Now, when you say you have a conversation through a safe site and you said a wink, what do those things mean?
Well, each individual online dating site has certain cute little quirky things that will get you noticed. So if, say, for example, I noticed a 56-year-old man from Lake Forest, Illinois, and he looked interesting to me, and I liked his profile, and I just, you know, I would, to let him know that I was interested, I would wink, and that's what they have on that site.
Okay.
The wink.
Okay. And then this safe site, how does that work?
Well, the safe site, when I say safe site, it means that only my conversations that I'm having with him will be just between the two of us.
Okay.
On that site.
And so at that point, the person doesn't have your direct contact information number,
no.
Nor you his.
No, absolutely not. Not until you feel comfortable enough that you want to carry on think about going for a coffee or a lunch or something. Then you can exchange phone numbers or your email addresses, your regular email address.
All right, so here you are, 30 years of marriage, two grown children, shocked out of your mind in a lot of ways at the change in your life, and now you're looking at an internet dating site. Were you horrified? Were you excited? Were you frightened? Were you, what was going on for you when you first logged on?
You know, I was just newly separated, so I was still grieving, honestly,
yeah.
And that's, I think that's one of the messages that I want to put out there. I have to say I was a little excited. It was more of an investigative process for me, because it was so unbelievably unusual, and I didn't expect to find what I found, obviously. But I did feel a little vulnerable because, you know, sure. I hadn't been on the dating scene. I'd been in a committed relationship for 30 years, and to think that I would be able to talk to another man, I almost felt guilty. There was a sense of guilt, like I was betraying the person that I was with for so many years.
Yeah,
that was odd. That was very odd.
It's a confusing time.
It's a confusing time. But like I said, I was just newly separated and probably should not have even thought about this because you're not ready. I mean, you're not really ready to get into a relationship until you've gone through all the stages of grief.
Yeah.
Basically.
So what did you do? Did you meet anybody?
Oh, I've met quite a few people, actually.
Hence the
it's
dance
all
card.
In my book.
And your dance card seems like it filled up.
It has filled up, and I had quite an experience with the 10 dancers that I have on my card. None of them have really ended in anything specific in terms of a long-term relationship. I did have two, my very first one and my very last one, curiously enough.
Well, but, tell me about Mr. Slow, because what you do, it's really interesting, is that you describe each of these different types of relationships according to dance styles. So there's Mr. Slow, there's Mr. Tango, there's Mr. Jitterbug, there's Mr. Salsa. Tell us about Mr. Slow.
Mr. Slow was my very first date online. And what I'm going to tell you is that because I was just separated, I wasn't eager to get into a relationship, but all of a sudden this man comes into my life and he just did all the right things in the sense of, you know, making me feel like I was special and throwing endearments just like we all are really love to have.
Sure.
And so I thought, well, this was just fabulous. He was a slow dancer because he was very, I'm going to say a little uneducated, and the slow dance is a very minimalist, easy dance to do. He was very conservative and very immature. However, he had been divorced for 19 years, and he was ready to get into a marriage situation. I was not, obviously.
So he was looking for marriage, not just a dating situation. He actually wanted to remarry.
He absolutely wanted to remarry, and for me, he was a rebound date.
Sure. Did you ever actually meet him?
Oh, yes. Actually, we did have somewhat of a long-term relationship, 2 years.
2 years, and this was the first person you met online.
The first person I met online, and unfortunately, had it been at a different time, we might be together today because he was a wonderful man. Although there were things that I discovered later on after the two-year period that would not fit within the framework of my life because he was uneducated and I had several degrees, and I did find that our communication was lacking tremendously. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I can handle this. And so I made the decision to not continue, and frankly he lived in a different city, so it's not like we saw each other on a regular basis. And that's another issue that I kind of address, in that it's very difficult to have any kind of continuing relationship with someone if they don't live within the same city that you live in.
Yeah, long distance and internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it just sounds...
not work.
It doesn't sound like it would work certainly well. That's for sure. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'd like for you to talk about Mr. Tango. That Tango sounds like the opposite of Mr. Slow, but we'll find out, folks. This is Pamela Brewer talking to Anne Reichart, who is the author of The Dance Card, Looking for Love After Divorce. After 30 years of marriage, Anne found herself divorced and checking out the internet dating scene. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And during the 2 years that you were dating Mr. Slow, how did your children respond to your dating?
Oh, that's another interesting question. My one daughter had been gone. Like I said, my older daughter, she was off to college, so she really wasn't even a part and parcel to any of this.
Okay.
My younger one had a difficult time thinking that someone could replace her father. She wanted me to be happy, and she would constantly tell me, oh, I'm happy that you're seeing someone. However, I didn't feel that that was the case. Deep down in my heart, I knew that it was she was still reeling through her own grieving process.
Of course. And during the time that you were dating Mr. Slow, did you have a sense that your ex-husband was dating as well? Did he leave and go immediately into a relationship? Do you know what was going on in his life? Did you know what was going on in his life?
I didn't know specifics, but I had heard, and I wasn't really out there to ask questions about it because I was just trying to survive myself.
Sure.
To be honest with you, there were women, and that's one of the reasons for, you know, moving forward because, well, I think the sexual gratification or, you know, the ego boosting that he wasn't getting at home, obviously. You have to look elsewhere, and he has been with the same woman now. He dated quite a bit, but he has been with the same woman now for quite a few years and will be getting married.
Ah, and how is that feeling to you?
You know, well, right now I really have no problem with it.
Okay.
Because it's given me enough time to move forward with my own life, you know, and I've discovered that I'm an independent person from him, and he really doesn't define who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, he's really given me the sense that I can move forward and not really be just the wife of someone.
Gotcha.
And in that sense, it's been very empowering and wonderful.
And your daughters, your oldest daughter, where is she in this mix as we speak today?
My older daughter is, we are certainly connected, obviously, but she doesn't live where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see her very infrequently, and she has moved on to her own life. She's getting married this year. And I think that I'm sensing that she is having or has had problems with relationships. She's even told me so. And I have to say that even though she has a date to get married, there is some doubt in her mind. And I think because of what she's seen within her own family, I can understand that totally.
Absolutely. And that's not an atypical response when this kind of thing happens. I mean, there's such a tremendous breach of trust and safety and stability that how could she not really have some wondering?
Exactly. And she has really expressed that to me too. And, you know, I'm just trying to help her through the situation, and I don't want to dissuade her from marriage. My goodness, you know, we are a couple society, and I want my daughters, everyone really, to be happy ultimately, and if we can find that perfect partner to fulfill our life, how special would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, she's also got to know that one man does not represent the universe of men. But it is a dance in terms of making a decision to be with someone who's not like the person that she actually grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be difficult. Let's talk about Mr. Tango. What was going on with Mr. Tango?
Mr. Tango, he was quite an interesting gentleman. He was a true Tango partner, for sure. You know, the push and pull of an individual. He had been left by his wife, former wife. So his ego had been really damaged.
Yeah.
And he took the lead in our relationship, and he was just embittered by the fact that his wife had left him, you know, for another man.
Mm-hmm.
And his ego just wouldn't allow anyone else within his life. And it was all about him. He was very self-serving, very mm-hmm. narcissistic, really didn't really ask questions to me about what my life entailed, but it was all centered around him.
Interesting.
Very interesting. And he continues today to kind of connect with me via Facebook, or, you know, he does have my phone number, so he'll text occasionally when I know, in fact, he's in a relationship with someone.
Wow. So he's still doing what he was doing.
Yes.
Let's go over to Mr. Jitterbug.
Mr. Jitterbug. He was so fun. And by contrast, he was terribly high energy, totally uninhibited. He was full of improvising and a true high wire act, but I have to say he was probably the most fun partner I've ever had. He danced, he loved sports, he made me laugh, but he was just totally out of control. And I didn't know how to, you know, tap that high wire act. And it was like high anxiety for me every time I was with this gentleman. And I tried to calm him down and, you know, maybe have some normalcy within a relationship, but it was just impossible. We just didn't have the chemistry.
Gotcha. As you were going through these relationships and meeting these folks, what was going on in your own mind and what was going on in your own heart? How were you feeling about this whole process?
I was exhausted, to be honest with you. Exhausted. Because here I was 56. I'm 63 now. I'm going to be 64 and collecting Social Security. And I'm thinking to myself, this is the stage of life I should be, you know, resting on my laurels and traveling and enjoying something with an individual. When in fact, I'm this exhaustive search for finding someone to be a partner in my life. Did I really want this? I kept questioning because nothing seemed to work out.
And so here you are, 64. Would you recommend to someone who's recently divorced that they try internet dating? Would you recommend they wait? Would you recommend they not even bother?
I would recommend that they wait until they're divorced.
Okay. Well, Definitely.
That's because I do see that a lot of people that are, you know, they will say on your profile site whether you're separated, divorced, widowed, or whatever. And those that are separated generally are not ready to move forward with another relationship.
Okay.
They're carrying the wounds and the hurt from their past relationship forward to someone else. And so the timing is all wrong.
Okay.
So you have to finish that grieving process for sure. And certainly there's really no other way to meet people unless you have friends that can introduce you to someone.
Okay.
I would highly recommend the online dating site because there's really no other way.
Okay, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. All right, so now take us to Mr. Cha-Cha.
Oh, Mr. Cha-Cha. Here is a gentleman that I've never met.
Okay.
But, you know, I have been talking to him for 6 years.
Oh, my goodness.
We have discussed our lives with each other. I have a terribly interesting connection with this gentleman. He, come to find out, his wife had left him. He had a stroke, and he has severe depressive bouts since his stroke. And he's become a recluse and has a difficult time moving forward or even getting out of his house.
Oh, my.
I have become kind of a safe haven for him, and I talk to him about, you know, maybe getting together, let's plan something. And, you know, I'm terribly non-threatening. I would be very helpful to him in making him feel comfortable. But it's never happened because he just can't get out of his funk.
Mm.
And I feel very bad for him because he was once a very vital, intelligent, productive man.
Yeah, that really is very sad.
Very sad.
6 years. And
yeah.
Mr. Two-Step, who's he? What's he doing?
Mr. Two-Step was just a quick one date. Actually, it was a dinner date. And he was a giant of a man. He was in his 40s. I was in my 50s at the time.
Okay.
And he was like 6'7".
Oh,
probably
wow.
350 pounds, but he was an intellectual. He had several PhDs, which was fascinating to me. He worked in various collegiate-level universities, instructing, even as a young man like that. But he also lived the high life. He did the speedboats and the very, very fast-paced life of a high roller in a big city.
Gotcha.
Well, he kind of decided that this was not his forte, at least this was the discussion we had, and so he replaced these fast-moving vehicles for the farm life, which his grandmother had, I guess, in northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
He'd come to the farm with his horses and and ride the old tractors in the farm. But, well, that's the story that he gave me, but I have a sense. I only met him one time, and we never really reconnected after that. I just have a sense that he didn't socially, he was kind of socially inept and kind of uncomfortable in general with women. I sense that. I have a feeling he's back to the high, you know, the fast-paced, high-rolling life.
Okay. As you were meeting these men, did you have a preconceived sense of what would be a good fit for you, or were you just kind of taking them as they showed up and being curious about it?
I was investigating. I didn't know what would fit into my life, to be honest with you, and that's why, you know, I felt like I had to date these various gentlemen to figure that out. And in dating them, obviously, I'm discovering, with depending upon their expression of style and the nature of their dating game, what kind of personality they were. So that's why I named them after various ballroom dances, because they are in line with the definition of the specific dance. So who I am looking for, I'm still struggling with.
Ah. Are you still looking?
I am still looking.
Okay. There are certainly, as you get older, I many times I have heard women say, well, I didn't really feel like I was ready for sex, but he said I'm not getting any younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so these women are getting involved in sexual activity, sometimes safe, sometimes not safe. Did you feel with any of these men a push to become sexually active at all, or sexually active before you were ready, if you were ready at all?
Not at all. That's the curious thing about it. I'm a very conservative individual, and all of my life I grew up with a very authoritarian father and family, and that's just something that is not, you know, you don't really speak of. And when I was dating these gentlemen, there was either chemistry or a connection, or there was not.
Okay.
And the various ones, like Mr. Rumba, he and I had this undeniable chemical connection that I cannot explain, and the sexual tension there was incredible. And I was ready. I mean, that's all I can say. It was the timing was right. It was okay. And I felt free to be who I truly am inside. And that was really the first time that, I've opened myself up to the vulnerabilities of being a real normal human being, which a lot of people don't really want to talk about. They think about it, but they're afraid to talk about it. Well, I talk about it in my book, and I think it's been empowering for other women too to know that, you know, even though I'm 56 now, 64, that we are still sexual human beings.
Absolutely.
And we have all the desires and needs of anybody.
And you allowed yourself to be that whole human being that you are.
I did. It was wonderful.
You're saying was, past tense?
It was wonderful with the few that I had connected with intimately, yes. Past tense meaning by the very last dancer, Mr. Waltz, he offered such romantic and sensual a connection, the two of us. I thought that he would be my long-term partner. He was the first romantic partner that I really felt that there would be a hope of love and commitment.
Mm.
But there were too many things that happened, you know, within my gut feeling that I knew it wasn't right. And the reason being, I mean, we had a definite chemical connection, and we were very sexual. He was 16 years younger than I am.
And was that a problem for you?
It was a problem for me from the very start. I never
even
initiated the conversation. He contacted me.
Okay.
And I just felt like he had a six-year-old daughter at the time, and I thought, well, maybe I can help him. He was new in the community. I could help him steer him towards certain activities for his child, because I had daughters. I know about girls, and I was more than happy to help him, get acquainted with the community. But it gradually grew into a relationship, which was shocking to me. But deep in my gut, and there is that gut feeling, I just knew it wasn't right.
Interesting. Folks, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear more from Anne Reichart about paying attention to her gut and what she knew wasn't right for her. We'll be right back. You said you knew in your gut that it wasn't right. Was there more that didn't feel right to you in addition to the age difference, or was that sort of the crux of it for you?
Well, there was much more than that that I had discovered later on. We had been dating for a year and a half, and there were revelations that were revealed to me that I just couldn't even believe by this partner, and I felt it was very wrong for him to have waited to tell me certain situations about his past life that, you know, after we had already kind of gone and gotten into a relationship, and it really wasn't fair. So there again, there was another loss. I had to make the decision whether I wanted to be with this gentleman for several reasons. Okay. The age difference, and he had a young daughter. Did I want to raise a young daughter again? My girls were grown and gone.
Mm-hmm.
She was the age of my potential grandchild.
Right.
And he was still in his 40s and had maybe 20-some years left in the workforce, and I was retired. I was ready to move on and enjoy life and travel a little bit. Well, if I waited 25 years, I'd be dead by then, so who knows, you know. So I felt that it just, that in itself said to me that, you know, this is not going to work. And then I also felt a financial pull. I did feel like I was being his mother and providing for him financially mm-hmm. as well, and that's another red flag. So, but there are other issues that are entailed in his particular story that I will not reveal right now, but they're fascinating.
So for you, year and a half, then the relationship is ended. So it sounds like, you know, with the exception of the one date guy, that most of your relationships have really been what a lot of people consider long-term. They're not 30-year marriages, but year and a half, 2 years, 6 years. I mean, these are long-term connections.
Well, only two of them were long-term, the first one and the last one. The ones in between were just, I would say, four or five dates, or possibly, or with Mr. Rumba, we still have a connection, shall we say, via email or text. I don't see him anymore, and I don't see Mr. Salsa anymore, or Cha-Cha, but we still communicate. So I guess we do have a relationship, yes, in that sense.
Well, tell us about Mr. Salsa.
Mr. Salsa was fabulous. He was about my age and very handsome man. He was an accomplished cellist.
Ah.
And he went around the world performing in symphonies. And after he finished that, he decided to settle down. He had a son who was 12 at the time, and he started his own business by making cellos and banjos and various stringed instruments.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, when I first met him, Pamela, it was like we had known each other forever.
That can be quite seductive.
It was very interesting. I mean, we both looked at each other. It was like, I know you from somewhere. Where have we met? And it just made for a very easy transition into that first and only date, I have to say.
First and only date?
It was the first and only date we've had.
What happened?
Well, it was a lovely luncheon and a very sensual, intimate afternoon.
And that was that?
And that was that, and I'd still communicate with him, and he, you know, still wants to get together, but his life is consumed with creating his craft.
Okay.
And he's, you know, has never really found anybody in his life either, but we have kind of a nice relationship just by talking back and forth, and it's very curious. It's very curious.
It certainly sounds like you've met a lot of different type of men at this point. Now, 8 years divorced, yes?
Yes.
Do you feel like you want to remarry at some point? Would you ever live with someone without benefit of marriage? Where are your thoughts going in the relationship realm at this point?
That's another good question, because that is evolving as we speak.
Mm.
I would have to say, 2 years ago, I was ready to get married, and I would have loved to have settled in with somebody. But, you know, until you find that perfect individual, I don't think you can make that decision.
Okay.
I will never say never to marriage. Obviously, I'm from that era where I would love to be with someone. And frankly, I'm reaching an age now where, you know, frailty is set in, and I want a companion. I want somebody there to be with me in case something happens, and to do things with. Because, you know, when you're single and alone, honestly, my life has changed to the point where I don't do anything. Not don't do anything, but I just don't do the things that I used to do when I was a couple.
Mm. Would you say you're now 64, 8 years out of a marriage, would you say you're happy today?
I am happy. I am very, very happy, but I think part of that happiness has to do with my redefining myself and reinventing who I am.
Mm.
I'm very proud of what I've done. I keep busy, and I'm very productive, and just having written this book, and I have my second book is coming out too. It's a continuation of the dance card.
Oh.
And where are all of these dancers now? And I open up a whole new dance card with 10 new dancers.
Oh, this is wonderful. You'll have to make sure that Mind Talk gets a copy of this.
I will, definitely. I have totally different ballroom dances on there. And once again, each personality is specific to a dance. And so I'm trying to muddle through individuals and what do I really want in terms of someone, you know, as a long-term partner. And I don't think we look at those specifics when we're 20 or 30.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for many people at the point that they're 50 or 60, they may decide what's the point. Or let me take whatever is in front of me because, gee, you know, he or she is close to being alive, so I'm just going to go for that. And, you know, what I enjoy so much about what you're saying is that you're taking your time and being clear that you deserve to have someone who for you is a good fit for you.
We all have to do that, Pamela. I am seeing this happening time and time again. And since I've been divorced, I have so many of my contemporaries that have been going through a divorce themselves.
Mm.
I try to help them through the process and tell them what I experienced because they're doing online dating. And I give them cautionary tales. And I tell them to be careful, to look for this, and also know who you are,
yeah,
and what you are looking for, because oftentimes people want to settle just for settling's sake to be with an individual because they feel the loss of not being a couple. And then what happens is they hate each other down the road, and there's nothing that they have in common. I'm seeing this time and time again, and it's sad.
Yeah, it is very sad, and I think you're very right that it happens more than perhaps we would like to think about, this idea of just sort of being with somebody just for the sake of being with somebody, particularly in the situation where someone has been left with the words, well, I just don't love you anymore. I mean, that can really shake so many people so much to their core that they're kind of just feeling desperate to have somebody who'll say, I love you, even if they don't behave in a loving way sometimes.
Oh, exactly. And I think being at the age that I'm at, now I have a third of my life left. I mean, it's a funny way of looking at it, but it's realistic. A third of my life. Now, I'm happy where I'm at. I have a wonderful family and a lot of activities that I do on my own. And, you know, obviously I'm writing, so I'm very, very busy. So I'm very, very happy. Now, you asked me if I wanted someone to come into my life and move in with me. I don't know if I want that at this point.
Mm.
But I'm not discounting the fact that that could happen. So, I leave that door open, and I'll let the sun shine in if it's meant to be.
Gotcha. Anne Reichart, it really has been wonderful talking with you about the dance card, Looking for Love After Divorce. Is there a website that folks can go to?
Yes, it's annreichart.com, and it's just annreichart.com, or I have a blog that I've started, and it's annreichart@wordpress.com.
Okay, sounds great. And I'm just going to spell that last name again. It's R-E-I-C-H-A-R-D-T. First name is A-N-N, so it's annreichart.com.
Correct.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And make sure you let us know when that second book is out.
I will. Thank you, Pamela. It's been a pleasure.
All righty. Folks, thank you for joining me on this edition of Mind Talk. You can also listen to Mind Talk on demand at myndtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Assistant to the executive producer is Lede Battle. Social media coordinator is Lee Mahan. The production team consists of Antonio Slade, Ariel Medley, and Janice White. Mind Talk is produced daily as an educational public service and is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed practitioner of your choice. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That's 301-654-5286. For more information, of course, go to mindtalk.org. And remember, always, always remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.